Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Command Post.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Fire Engineering Talk Radio and to our show, The Command Post. I'm Chief Rick Lasky, along with my good buddy, Chief John Salka. We've got another great show for you tonight. John, you and I were just talking briefly before we went live. We had another great company officer, Kim. I mean, every one of them has been great, but this one in Indiana, for our listeners, another CSU-sponsored program. Nikki for CSU was awesome. It was hosted by the White River Township Fire Department in Indiana. Chief Jeremy Pell and Training Chief Dale Saucer and their folks did a great job, didn't they, John, as hosts? Great job.
You know what? They really did. They did a great job. And like we always say, most of us and our colleagues and our friends that travel around teaching around the country, most of us have great audiences and great sponsors and hosts and everything else where we go. But the Company Officer Academy and the CSU Company Officer Academy, which we're really proud of, Columbia Southern University and us, Rick and I, have hooked up, and we present it collectively together. And, you know, of course, we have a host organization, a host fire department or a college or a training school, and it just works out really, really great. We'll talk more about that later, and we'll give you either our numbers or our websites or our emails that you can get a hold of us and talk about how you can set it up. But it's a great setup. Guys get not only college credits, but they get the 3 days of training with both of us there. And, people just – I told you right after the class the other day, one guy was like, I can't believe this is so great. All the stuff that they got set up, the drinks and refreshments and a great room with air conditioning and tables to write on and take notes. We're not crouched into a little folding chair somewhere. And so we just get a lot of good comments on it from attendees, which is obviously the goal. The goal is to make the attendees happy and satisfied with the class and leave with some good information, and we think it does that. So sometimes we're bragging a little bit on ourselves, but we're happy with the way things go, and it's been just getting very popular, and we enjoy doing it. Yeah, you're right.
Well, and you're right about the, when you sit there, it sounds pretty simple, you know, plenty of room to sit, to tables and chairs, but you and I have both been there. When we've been like squeezed into a little tiny classroom or, you know, an auditorium, which is great when you're there for like one day or for a few hours. But, you know, for 3 days to take notes and put your coffee down, your water, your phone and all your stuff, you know, they did a great with the church there. They headed that church. The church, they were incredible. It was just a great. How about dinner at the fire? How about that firehouse? How about that firehouse?
Yeah.
Is that something or what?
Yeah, it was
good. Lord.
It was super. We had a great night at one of their stations, and of course the brothers and sisters put a big meal up for us, which I'm sure they eat like that pretty regularly. But they spread out a nice meal for us, and we sat down and socialized a little bit with them and checked out the apparatus and the rest of the place. It was quite a Taj Mahal, but yeah, it was fun.
They caught a couple of runs over there, but and they've got. I mean, you know, John. What I liked was, walking in, and the first thing you see on the left is that whole. It was like the forceful entry corner. It had, they had their own homemade props, right, with locks and doors and stuff and buckets full of things just to go there and play with your force entry tools. I mean, the door props and everything else. It was pretty. I mean, as soon as you walk in the firehouse,
right. Absolutely. It was great. Had a lot of fun.
Well, great group. And we've got, we've got a bunch of great classes coming up. You can, get a hold of us. I know I post, I know all the ones I do on my calendar, plus the ones that John and I do together. For our listeners, if we say this every time because we get asked this question a lot, but if you're looking to host any of our programs, whether it's John and I together or separately, we do a ton together, a ton separate. Give us a shout. We'll have that information at the end. If you're looking to host Company Officer Academy with us or with us and CSU, Columbia Southern University. Same thing, reach out to us and we'll get you all lined out. Again, prideandownership.com, the website calendar, and then on my Facebook page, I post all of our company officer academies and events. Don't forget about Fire Engineering. I mentioned it every show. Fire Engineering's video streaming project. It is absolutely incredible. Instead of spending $500-$600 on one video or two videos, you spend $500-$600 for your whole, like, that's it for everything. You get all of them. You get hundreds of videos and training tips. And Mike Champo's on there doing back to the basic tips. And I've got some stuff on there. And just plus all the videos, it's absolutely incredible. If you're at all interested in that for your department, it's $600. You do the discount. I even have a code for you. It goes to $500. That's it. You don't have to worry about transporting DVDs or having to copy anything or whatever. But at the same time, it's there. You don't have to worry about storing anything. It's like Netflix for firefighters. I say all the time. There's a video, actually. If you go to my Facebook page or Twitter account, you'll see there's a video on there about it. I did. Absolutely incredible. If your firehouse has internet, you've got it. I watch them on the airplane on my iPad. It's just, they're absolutely incredible. So FDIC is April 8th to the 13th, 2019, and from the Clarion Fire Rescue Group, formerly Penwell Corporation, and the new owners are in love with that conference, of course, and with the magazines. John and I will be teaching there again, obviously. We'll be there, I think this year, John, we are, I think we're Tuesday, right? We're Tuesday, Monday.
Tony.
Looks like we're Monday from 8 till 12. We're teaching our chief, it's a portion of our, one of our chief officer programs, the field chief training program. So if you're a battalion chief, division, deputy, or whatever, where you, you know, fill one of those positions, this is a great, we had the room filled last year. And it's a program we do on the, you know, we've been doing on the road. So that's Monday. Then probably Friday we'll be doing the 3 degrees of Mayday again. And then in the big room Thursday with Chief Bobby Halton doing issues and challenges. Last year, John, I think last year was one of the best issues and challenges we had. We got on a roll. There's no script, right? It's just us. You know. And I think, folks, I think I just lost John to a structure fire. Yeah, most of you know that John has been, 43 years in the fire service, 33, 34 plus with the FDNY, and then he had 43 years as a volley. Right now he's first assistant chief in South Blooming Grove up in Orange County, and I heard the pager go off in the background. You probably heard a little while ago, and then he just texted me and said he's got to go. He's got a structure fire, so we'll see what happens there. But again, FDIC this year, Monday we'll be doing our hot hands-on training workshop, and that'll be the field chief's training program. Like I said, if you're an up-and-coming battalion chief, future battalion chief, you're an acting battalion chief, deputy district chief, whatever, volunteer career, if you fill that role, from the time you're on your way into the firehouse, either go to that or go to a call, or while you're at work, from the time you get in there to the time you go home. It was a great, great class last year. We had, like I said, we filled the room, and then again, Thursday with Bobby doing the big room issues and challenges. And then, I just answered John when he had to leave to go to structure fire. It's probably one of the best ones we've had with the best feedback. And everything along those lines. And then Friday we'll be doing the 3 degrees of May. And obviously we'll be signing books in the fire engineering book and video booth like we do each year. We'll be going from there. One other note, EMS Today, that's the GEMS conference and exposition, EMS conference, EMS Today, will be in Maryland February 20th through the 22nd, February 20th through 2-2. I'm actually going to be there. I'm honored to going to be there doing a breakout session on EMS and leadership. And basically what it comes down to is the whole program I'm doing is, you know, it's about average leaders, you know, consider a nuisance, progressive, you know, forward-thinking leaders consider it a blessing. I've always been, if you know me as a paramedic for a long time, the departments I've worked, with as, and had the honor to serve as fire chief, ALS driven. And I just think it's a great way to again, get into your community and take care of your folks. I know, some places don't do it, but I've always considered it an honor. So we're good. Hey, before we move into our topic, we've got September 11th approaching here. Today's September 6th. The 11th is just around the corner. And I guess the big question for you tonight would be, what do you have planned, whether it's a moment of silence for your department, maybe for your county chiefs or County Firefighters Association? Are you attending a memorial this year? And I say this all the time. I start saying the phrase right then and there. Everybody's talking about never forget and wearing the stickers, but forgetting is just that. Never forgetting means never forgetting. And, just it was kind of disheartening to walk around the apparatus shows, and you really don't see the decals anywhere on the rigs anymore. Everybody was all hot to trot. They had the stickers all over their rigs and their helmets and, their chief's cars and ambulances and everything else with, never forget the 9/11. And now it's kind of just, a lot of places it's kind of went away. I know in Lewisville, Texas, it never will. They've got those proudly displayed on their vehicles, as so many other departments do still. But there's a lot that just seem to be, it's become easy just to push it off. We all talk about it and, I think we're trying to forget it. The talent that we lost, I personally, I could say 41 friends on that day, but I can't imagine, the people that I know, my friends from the FDNY, going through that on that day and then the days afterwards. And now they just posted something on one of the social media accounts today, that they're very close to surpassing that 343 number, 344 if you count the fire patrolman, and then you've got the dispatcher from Jersey City that was there that was killed as well. But we're like knocking on the door of surpassing that number with those who have died from World Trade Center, related illnesses or cancer. It just seems like every other day they're posting another tribute to someone who's been taken from us with a World Trade Center related type injury or cancer. It's so very, very sad. It's just to see that we're still losing so many people. And, most places, you have a tragedy and you post the names and that's it. But this one is just, and we're far from getting past it. So please, this old never forgetting means never forgetting thing is just that. There's a lot of people out there that are suffering today still from that day. Police officers, the Port Authority, NYPD, everyone else that was there that day. You had federal officers. I mean, everybody forgets a lot of the folks that were there that were public safety, whether it was federal, state, city, the EMS folks, the fire department, everybody that was involved then. That were there then and the days afterwards. So please, prayer goes a long way. Hopefully we're going to do a good job remembering them this year and every year after and throughout the year as well. Our topic for tonight that John, I want to talk to you about, like I said, if you just tune in, my partner John Salkin just left for a structure fire at his department where he's at now. But our topic was, and this is a show, if you've been following me on Facebook and Twitter, I've been posting these Throwback Thursdays, and we went back. Pete Procchio from Fire Engineering. We went back and we dug up the Pride and Ownership podcast before we had the live show that we do now, which is phenomenal. Chief Bobby Halton came on board. So many great things started to happen. We had some great folks before that as well, but Bobby's done, just phenomenal with everything he's touched when it comes to the fire service, let alone anything to do with FDIC, fire engineering, fire, anything that with Penwell, now Clarion. But we started doing the Pride Ownership, the Love for the Job, podcast, and I was calling it the talk radio. And they were taped, and we would play them later on versus this being a live show. And we did about 44, 45 shows over the couple of years of doing those, and we had some really good ones. And one of them was you're going to see me post what I've been posting the past couple two Thursdays, and then this today, and then it'll push forward. About four or five different programs I did with Professor Glenn Corbett. Most of you know Glennie. Glenn's a professor at John Jay College in Manhattan. Been a firefighter forever. The smartest person I've ever met in my life. I absolutely adore him and love him. He's a buff and a collector like I am, a fire memorabilia. Walking, talking, historian, codes, anything. Absolutely incredible. And we set out to do one show just touching on some things in the history of the fire service, and we ended up breaking it to about six different episodes. So many people have asked about those episodes again that we chose to start playing them again, doing the Throwback Thursdays, along with some other ones. Harry Carter, Dr. Harry Carter, we're going to do one about Brothers Times Two with the Masons. That's a two-parter. You'll hear from Chief Tom Freeman. You'll hear from Chief Eddie Buchanan, and the list goes on. Chief Bobby Halt was a great one in there with him. There's a couple of my good buddies, Josh Salk, and one, again, touching a topic tonight. It's titled "As the First Line Goes, So Goes the Fire." Now, we want to touch on tonight is the importance of stretching the first line. It's so easy nowadays to get all kind of twisted with a lot of the different things we posted on social media, a lot of good stuff, a lot of not so good stuff. Some of it's outright just garbage. There's a lot of great things if you know who to follow, who has their act together, and so on and so forth. But that being said, nothing has ever had as great an impact on the outcome of a fire, good or bad, all right, than stretching that initial attack line and how well you do it. You've heard me say it on this show before. You've heard me in some of my classes if you've been there. We're so busy lately. We're so busy jumping out of helicopters with carabiners and everything else. We can't stretch a hose line anymore. Sebastian, one of the incredibly funny comedians, newer comedians, an Italian guy from the Chicagoland area, is just incredibly funny. He does a show. One of his shows is, aren't you embarrassed? And the question for me is, rather than, I'm not saying I'm an armchair quarterback or that kind of person, but I look at some of the videos posted on Facebook. And go, aren't you embarrassed? Now, I will never ever get on there and post nasty stuff. We did a Hump Day Hangout show a few months ago called "The Bullies and Thugs and Facebook Firefighters," and I believe fiercely in the whole brother sister thing. If you know me, I don't know what brotherhood. There's a her in my brotherhood. Some of these people belong to, but to say the despicable things that they say on a post regarding a fire, not even constructive, destructive. I've got an article coming out about being, constructive versus destructive, but the comments are just, it's to not even know all the details and so on and so forth. The example I always use, folks, is, it's one thing if I watch a video and I see somebody not wearing their face pieces or either, leading up to while overhauling or whatever, and we know where we're going with that, with the whole cancer awareness thing finally. One of the issues I bring up is, I have no problem with somebody posting on there, hey, great knock on the fire. In light of the whole cancer, cancer awareness, where we're at now and cancer studies, I really like seeing them wear their face piece a little bit sooner, so on and so forth. But the outright nastiness of some of the comments is just, and I just think some of us need to step up and if you know some of these people, you say, look, really, how old are you? If you can't be an adult, if you can't be a true brother or sister and not just go after someone, then don't post nothing. But the problem is, we all know this, not to get on the whole social media thing, is social media gives people who have no integrity and people who are, I'll just call them, a lot of cowards out there, a chance to get on there and bitch, complain, and say stuff they shouldn't, and it gets out of control. And it's kind of embarrassing for them, I think, for me to be able to sit back and watch them get into it. I'm like, really, if you really saw what was going on, how people perceive it, I think you'd be a little bit embarrassed. But I do have to say, some of the videos that are being posted, some of the videos, I watch them and I'm like, God, how long should it take to get the first line charged. I mean, let's talk about that for a second, okay? And I've asked this question in a bunch of classes. How, you know, show of hands, how many people either currently drive or have driven a pumper to a structure fire? Hands go up. Then I ask the question, and the very next question is, okay, so let's talk about this. You pull up, and you got, I'll just say, you got fire blown out the front end of a home, okay? Maybe a couple windows out the front. We'll talk about size of everything else later. But, you know, you got fire showing. You pull up. You're the first arriving pumper. You pull up, and what's the first thing you do? And someone will say, set the parking brake. Good, set the parking brake. What's the next thing? All right, put it in pump gear. All right, throw the pump switch. Okay, good. What's the next thing? Put it in gear. All right, now you get out of cab, and if you're safety conscious, what's the first thing you do? Well, I set a wheel chock out. There you go. Now, depending on what part of the country you're at and whether you have to prime your tank or not, what's the next thing you do? Okay, well, I may have to prime. All right, and then you're waiting for what? And everybody says they either, you know, put their hands in the air like waving around or give the thumbs up or, you know, send water, start water, call for water, charge a line, whatever. That should be going on, you know, very quickly, you know, and especially with most of our residential structures. Let's just call it a house fire for right now. Let's not get down the road with warehouses and other things like that. But we pull up at a house fire, and whether you pull a skid load, whether you do a reverse light event. I mean, when we are in Darien Woodard, you can ask Chief Curtis Burt in Lake Cities. When he was up in Illinois and Southside Chicago, golly, the departments there in that area could drop a skid load and lead out, be at a hydrant, charge that. I mean, as quick as, you know, a lot of people are doing, you know, are doing cross lays. So whatever you stretch, whether it's, you know, skid load or you stretch that cross lay, really, you know, you're stretching it, all right? You're flaking it out. You call for water, all right? Now you're masking up, hooding up, helmet, gloves, everything else. You bleed a line. About that time, your captain, lieutenant, or, you know, acting officer should be coming back from trying to do their 360, and that's it. But when you sit there and you watch some of this with the initial tack line and, you know, the videos where the driver operator is running around the rig and then trying to pull the 5-inch off, and you see the nozzleman, he or she standing there waiting for water, copper, and just waiting, and he's pulling 5-inch off the back of it. And I'm sitting to myself going, well, you have tank water for a reason. Whether it's 500 or 750 gallons, you know, you don't carry that water for ballast. It's not there to keep the rig from flipping over, okay? It's there, you know, to be used. Now, we'll talk about the positive water source here in a little bit, but that being said, 500 or 750 gallons of water goes a long way with the initial fire attack in most circumstances in that quick attack. All right, and then very quick. So that being said, you know, why would you not charge a line? You know, I was always trained away. Charge a line, give tank water, and then finish what you're doing. If you're going to finish making your hydrant, if it's close, or stretch a line, whether somebody's bringing you a line, backing down, drop your line, or you're doing it yourself, the hydrant's close. But I'm watching, and this has happened more than one video. Watch this driver run around a rig and try to pull it down. I'm like, you forgot to do something very important. You forgot to charge a line. God forbid there's anybody in the backside of the building in a room with the door closed, which we've been talking about a lot lately. You know, let's get water on the fire, stretch that initial tack line. So I'm not saying, you know, mean, nasty, horrible things about those that, you know, aren't getting the line stretched as quick as they should. What I'm saying is we're not training like we should be. I said before, the back to the basics thing, a lot of you heard me say this before. It's in our leadership book, legend in the fire service, Commissioner Leo Stapleton, retired a long time ago from the Boston Fire Department. He's got like 1,000 books he's written. He's up there in age. I adore him. I adore, when I grew up, I want to be just like him. What a great, great person. He was speaking before me. It was in 1996 at FDIC. And he'd go in the big room, and I think that's the year we had the topic. That year, the following year, was back to the basics. And he gets up in front of his whole crowd, and he stands at the podium, and, you know, he's a pretty calm guy, and he says, you know, I see that this year's theme is back to the basics. He goes, back to the basics. Why do we leave in the first place? We're actually not that good at them. We kind of suck at them. And everybody kind of laughed, and he put one slide up there on the screens. And it was about 12 bullet points of all the things we suck at, like stretch and hose, search and rescue, forge entry, ventilation, throw ladders, all those basics. And we did a show, a Hump Day Hangout show not too long ago, called Back to the Basics Again. And we had Chief Scott Thompson from the County Fire Department, Texas. Obviously, my co-host on that show, Chief Terry McGrath, Assistant Chief Terry McGrath from Louisville, a couple other great folks. And we talked about this, you know, stretching lines. You know, one of my captains was the interim chief in Trophy Club, Texas, another great fire department. Had a fire not too long ago, just did a great job knocking it. You know, we're coming back came in as a structure fire, that'd be nothing. We're coming back to quarters, and I'm behind the engine about a block, and all of a sudden I see them pull over to the curb near one of our city parks, and one of the firefighters, you know, jumps out of cab and grabs a cross lane, stretches it through the gate into the park, and I'm grabbing my radio, and I'm going, what do you got? And I'm like, you know, what do you got, kid? I'm looking, and I'm trying to see maybe the swing set's on fire. You know, some of those are the jungle gym sets made out of plastic now. Maybe there's a trash can. I'm looking, what's on fire? And I asked the captain. He waves, and no, chief. And I get out. I go, what you got? He goes, nothing. He goes, we're just stretching a line for practice. And the point he was making, and I love this, was not everybody has a training field or can get to the training field. And you don't need a training field or a burn tower or a burning building to stretch a line. You don't need anything but the line. I'll be honest with you, you don't even need a pumper to do it, okay? But it's always nice to have a pumper you can take it from. But to stretch that line, all right, so there, and he says, look, I've got him stretching around. He's going around a teeter-totter. He's going around those little springy little things that the kids ride. He's got to get it past that swing set back to the jungle gym set. I told him that's where your structure fires. So he's having to flake the hose around and lead off, just like you're leading through the front yard around trees and toys and mailboxes and railings and everything else to get to whatever door, you know, that you're trying to make entry to or close to where you're going to attack the fire. And I thought, this is just, that's phenomenal. You know, now, if you know me, I've always kind of appealed to the competitiveness of the firefighters. Not the stupid stuff, but, you know, I always liked that Station 1 wanted to be able to get a line stretched in, the first initial attack line, get it stretched into a building, into a fire, faster than the second new company or the next one or the whatever. And I really, as long as we weren't doing it unsafe, I never had a problem with that. That, you know what, that's that particular firehouse or threes or whatever, whichever firehouse is like, hey, look, you know what, and that this comes down to the leadership thing, but to sit there and go, you know, we want to be great, and not just at one or two things. We want to be great at everything. But why should we be the quickest at getting the line stretched in, you know, into a building, you know, whatever? Whether you attack it from the outside, inside, we'll talk about that later. But to get that line stretched, why shouldn't, you know, it be us? And I've always liked that. I've always liked that little bit of competition of. You know, and I've always asked people in class, so how do you think they got that way? Everybody, you know, blurts it out, training. You don't get that way without training. You don't get that way without stretching hose and stretching hose and stretching hose. I tell the story a lot in class. I was at a particular department. We were doing a tactics class, and at the end of the class, they wanted me, the guy said, hey, we talked about particular hose load in class. And the guys asked the question. They said, you know, would you show us, you know, that load and that stretch? I said, sure. So we go out in the bay and you know, we pull the cross layoff. So we do it, and they pull the front cross layoff, this engine. And I swear to you, hand to God, now a tree branch comes flying off. Now, look, I understand that our deck guns are really good at trimming trees in some neighborhoods, so I understand that. But the next thing comes flying over there, off the hose bed, off the cross lay, is a smashed up Coca-Cola can. And the guys kind of laughed. And one goes, oh, chief, that must have been. We had the football team riding on the engine during the homecoming parade. And I looked at him. I paused. I looked. I said, but it's February. I thought homecomings were in like September, October. So that means since October, you haven't pulled this hose off. I mean, you know, like some places do, you know, to test hose. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just, oh, my God. You know, so I didn't have to say it out loud, but we had a cup of coffee later. I'm like, that shouldn't be happening. That shouldn't be happening. You know, you should be stretching hose. You know, the importance of getting that first line, like we said, the topic for the show is the first line goes, so goes the fire. Stretching Andy Fredericks, talking about 9/11. Andy Fredericks, a lot of you know Andy Fredericks, Andy Nozzles. Andy was a good friend of mine, good friend of many people. I was talking the day before 9/11. He was going to come down to Louisville, do a program for us. Great, great person. Tremendous loss for the fire service. However, I will say this, Andy's not gone because people, we're all out there still teaching, you know, on behalf of Andy and what Andy was teaching. And so he will live forever as long as we want him to. He will, and we're not going to let him go away. Andy was always one about getting water and stretching that, you know, that initial attack line and getting it in there. The first line into that building is huge. It's absolutely huge. Let's back up to the size of for a second. Let's just talk residential structure fires right now. Okay. Let's just talk that. So number one, we're talking about the importance of stretch initial attack line. Okay. And, you know, so many people, you got a lot of classes at FDIC where, you know, the first 5 minutes dictates what's going to happen. And that's true in most cases. Although I was listening to some audio tapes of fires we had in Louisville when I was there, and there were some where I actually gave the sides up that we're losing the battle right now, but hang in there, we'll be back with you in a second. And, you know, 10, 12 minutes, 13, we started winning, and then we killed it, and we won the battle. But truly, that first engine and stretching that initial attack line is huge. Number one comes the size up. We talked about this before. Size up begins, you know, back in the firehouse. The size up begins in training. The size up begins with you as a company officer and who you have riding behind you. If you're a volley department, this is even more important for your Thursday night drill, or even when you're up there hanging out to stretch hose, because a lot of our volunteers, you know, and still the backbone of the fire service, you know, if you work like, you know, where I've been a volunteer, where John's a volunteer, 9 times out of 10, you don't know who's right behind you because it depends on who shows up and when they show up. So you can have different folks sitting there. So it's even more important, you know, to know who you've got and that they're capable of stretching that hose line. All right. So that being said, the size of starts with our training. It starts back in our apartment. It starts with knowing our apparatus. I found this amazing in my travels. How many firefighters, great men and women, they're great. They're fired up about the job, and you know, you're having coffee at a kitchen table talking shop, or they're showing you their rigs or their firehouse. How many actually don't know what comes out of their nozzles? You know, we'll look and I'll say, so what do you carry for cross lays? Is it, you know, 1 3/4? Is it 2 inch? What do you got in your skid loads? Whatever. What kind of nozzles do you have? You know, are they smoothbore fogs? Are they any other kind of configuration? There's so many different nozzles up there now on the market. You know, and I'll just look. So, and I'll look at a fire system. So what do you flow out of that cross line? And this is where it kind of bums you out a little bit, because a lot of the firefighters, not all of them, but a lot of them can't tell you. So if you're a company officer or a senior firefighter, all right, this is where you need to step up and do your job a little bit more and make sure that your guys and gals know. If you're a firefighter, you absolutely need to know how much water is coming out of the end of that nozzle, whether it's fully open, half open, or whatever, and how much you're carrying on that piece of apparatus to the scene. So again, you know, the size up, before we even get out, before they even drop the tones, starts with knowing your people, training on skills levels, having that, you know, that skill and that efficiency part of things that comes with training, to be able to stretch that line and get it off the rig and to wherever you're going quickly. But you have to know what's coming out of the end of the hose, you know, and how much water you're carrying and what your capabilities are even from there, whether it's hydrated area, non-hydrated, or whatever. You know, we just don't show up, jump on a rig, and blow the sirens and yahoo it. There's so much more to what we do. So the size up, yeah, we could do a whole show just about size up, but the size up, you know, ahead of time, is huge when it comes to making sure we know and understand what we're running with. All right. Then when we get there, you know, we've talked about this before. Yes, it is the company officer. Let's just talk the first due engine. All right, the first arriving engine, the first due engine. You know, that officer's job is to do a, you know, perform a size up, obviously. So you've got your first due officer doing their size up. All right. You've got that. Well, it's also everybody else's job to size up too. I used to do a lot of videotaping when I used to ride out with the FDNY with John or with Donnie Hay, those guys, and or they put with a company. And I noticed something that when they got off the rig, as they got off the rig, everybody looked or looked up. They all kind of – nobody ran with their heads down or took off running. They all kind of took a look at what they're about to walk into. When I do my trap now what class, talk about you know, you're in there, you know, you end up separating your partner or whatever the problem is, you're trapped inside a burning building. Well, you know, I remind a lot of people, in most cases, never say never, never say always, but in most cases, you didn't crawl into a cube. You didn't crawl into a cube. There's windows or doors somewhere, and you need to remember that. Well, the same thing, if you pay attention, if you're not looking at what you're about to stretch into, you know, you're just like a bunch of ducks wandering in a thunderstorm. Hope what happens for the right reason. So it's everybody's job to take a quick look. Now, take that a step further, where that company officer should make every attempt to do a 360 if possible. Now, this is a big debate for a lot of people when it comes to whether we should, you know, if we spend time with 360s or not. But sadly, if you read the line of duty reports, how many of them, oh my God, how many of them come back with you know, the importance of doing a 360, the importance of seeing all four sides of the building if possible, and so on and so forth, you know, is critical to the incident and so on. And then, you know, you look at whether it's walkout basements or all the different things we've missed when it comes to doing that 360, all right, for that first arriving officer. I had a rule. I didn't care if I got there first. I'll never forget house fire down the street from our headquarters building. And I got in there pretty quick, had fire, you know, pretty good fire actually out the back a little bit. I get off, I got a car, the buggy, I start doing my 360. I come around the back, Tommy Mack, one of the captains at the time on the engine, he's walking. I said, Tommy, front door, it's all out the back here. He goes, I know. And he kept doing the 360. He goes, you know, you've always told, and we talked about it. He goes, I got to get my 360. And I know why he was doing it, because I've said, you know what, unless you see for yourself as a first new officer, you really don't have the whole picture. Okay. So that being said, you know, all attempts should be to make that 360. Now, in most cases, not every time, when you arrive at a scene, you should have been able to grab all three sides of the building with your size up just by pulling up. As you're pulling up, whichever direction you're coming, you see one side, you see the front, the other side. That way you get off, you don't have to take a duck maybe down one side instead of walking or lapping the whole building. Now, if you live down here in Texas, where we had it's the fence capital of the world, there may be some difficulty in getting to that particular side of the building or whatever. So you got to do everything you can to get into that yard or whatever to take a look at that. I mean, think of all the things as the first arriving officer you can see or detect by doing a good 360. One is you're gonna know where utilities are. You might even be able to grab and shut the gas off. That's only a quarter turn. You do it with some pliers or with your halogen or whatever your officer's tool. All right, you're gonna be able to look and see if there's chain link fences back there. We're worried about down power lines, overhead power lines. You know, whether we have any walkout bases, what the fire conditions are out the back. You know, any signs of victims, whether we have windows open or, you know, drapes hanging aside or things thrown in the backyard. Do we have a ton of little kids' toys in the backyard? Or do we have no kids' toys and maybe a religious statue at a rose garden and, you know, maybe indicating, you know, older folks, maybe someone without any kids? Or how about a handicap ramp, you know, a ramp in the back that may indicate that you have a bedridden, you know, or somebody that's handicapped living in there that needs assistance that can't get out on their own. So you're looking at the windows, you're looking at the doors, you know, swimming pools. We talk about fire conditions, all these different things, and the list. I'm leaving a bunch of things out just from that part of the program. When it comes to a 360, as you do your lap around the building. Now think about this: you got your firefighter. Let's just say we got a 3-man crew. We all like to have 4 or 5, but your pump operator is doing his or her job. You get off as a company officer, your 360. You tell your firefighter, tell him or her to stretch a line. We'll talk about the front door. Hopefully the front door. And off you go. By the time you get around, the line should be stretched. They should either be charging it or be moments away from charging it. Bleeding off the line, it's another thing that if you watch a lot of videos, it seems like we've forgotten to do, is we have forgotten to bleed the line like we used to. Watch the videos. Very few people do that anymore, bleeding the line. Make sure you've got water before you get in there or kinked or whatever, that kind of stuff. And off we go. You know, company officer comes around the side, masks up, and you know, off we go. Now, that being said, that 360 was critical. This is where choosing which door, if you've been through our fire-round scenarios class or our first new officer portion of the company officer academy, we've talked plenty of times about 9 times out of 10, again, I'll say it over and over again, never say never, never say always, but 9 times out of 10, the best door of choice entrance to use on a house fire, residential structure, is going to be the front door. People are going to argue about, well, you know, I could get around here and all this and so on and so forth. You know, I was always a big proponent, and I still am, that I do my 360. If I've got a walkout basement and I've got heavy fire downstairs, if I can attack it and do everything I can from standing upright or on one knee right outside and kill as much as I can from back there before going in and trying to find the stairs going on, I'm a big believer in that, okay? A lot of people may argue that. John and I have had that discussion before, but, you know, if I can get a line back there quickly and attack that fire, let's say, you know, again, walkout basement, so you've got that whole backside exposed or open, or you can open or whatever, and you can hit all that fire from down there, rather than go through the front door and, you know, crawl over it and try to get to the basement stairs. All right. I've always been a big one for, if I could do that, I will. But let's back things up a little bit. You get to that front door. You know, the conversation always been, well, what if I got a door right here up the driveway? I could go right down here. A couple things that happen. Let's say you have fire out the window on the D side, okay, that delta side of the house there. All right, front door, let's get midship. You get in there, first of all, majority of, if it's a two-story home or whatever, the staircase is going to be somewhere close to where you're going in. All right, you go in, you can make a right, you can go in, you can attack that fire. Now, here's one of the problems you have if you choose to use that side door, maybe off a driveway, and go in there because it looks like the shorter route maybe to that bedroom is nobody's controlling or protecting the stairwell. And if anything goes wrong, if anything, you know, you lose water, whatever, there's all kinds of things, anything goes wrong, you have no control of the stairs, which in most cases is where you're going to find your bedrooms and any occupants, especially in the sleeping hours, okay? So that being said, you know, getting in through the front door, all right, now you've got, nothing's getting past you, you know what I'm saying? Nothing's getting past you. You got the stairs behind you. Let's say your second new company is a truck company. They can go right in, go right up, they go up the stairs behind you. You're not leaving them unprotected. You go and kill this thing off, you know. So we want to try and use the front door as much as possible, you know, when we're going in and attacking that fire. Now, not every fire is the same. We've talked about that before. So you've got to be smart about which way you're going to go. It all depends on accessibility and all these things that come into the whole size of thing. But 9 times out of 10, especially for house fires, the door choice is probably going to be, you know, your best one will be that front door where you can get in, control the stairs, get in, attack the fire, and be done. Not stretching hose down the driveway and coming around through the back. I got plenty of hose on the front yard that I can pull in to get where I have to go and do what I have to do. All right. So the size up is critical as to what size line. Now, you know, I'm a big believer in the 2.5, especially with a smoothbore on it. But, you know, we all know that, you know, the 2.5 isn't the easiest line to drag around a residential structure or an apartment building. You know, we can get it up to a breezeway. We have a lot of fire above us, and we're doing things like that. But, you know, you're not going to be very efficient dragging it, turning, if you don't have the manpower to do it. And not everybody is running with 5 people on an engine. You know, some of us, like I said, are running with 3 people or less. But 3 people, that means your officer and you are stretching that line. Again, I love the 2.5. I absolutely love the 2.5. But your line of choice is going to be huge. Again, if we want to get in as quickly as we can and get water delivered to the scene of fire as quickly as can to have that knockdown. Now, one of the discussions that comes up in class all the time, if you've been through the first two portions of Company Officer Academy again or our Company Officer Academy, is we ask the question, here's the 3 things. Let me back up. The 3 things that have to be addressed at every structure fire or report of a structure fire is fire attack, ventilation, and search. let's say a pot of beans, a pot of meat on a stove, smoked up an apartment or whatever, okay? So you're going to have to get him. You're going to have to shut off the source, shut off what's burning on the stove, all right? You're going to have to open a window or door or whatever, whether it's, that's all you do, or you set a fan or whatever you do, and you have to make sure there's no unconscious, asleep, intoxicated, whatever, occupants anywhere in there, and there's smoke, even for something that small, all right? So attack, vent, and search. Those three things have to be addressed at a minimum at the very beginning of this fire. So the next question is, if you could only do one of those, you're the first arriving pumper, you're the first arriving engine, you know, there's not nine alarms behind you down the street, you're riding that front seat, you're that company officer, you're the firefighters riding, you know, backwards, and you pull up and you could only do one of those three things, attack, vent, or search, what would it be? And surprising enough, and how I understand, I'm going to talk about it, understanding that I understand why people will say this, okay, you'll hear quite often, you know, it'll be search. Bunch of hands will go up in the room and say the first thing they would do is search. And my question is, why not stretch a line? They go, well, life safety. Now, so many of us, so many people in the fire service, since day one of fire academy, it's been pounded into your head, life safety, life safety, life safety, life safety. I agree 100%. But life safety, when it comes to a structure fire, all right, let's get back to, as the first line goes, so goes the fire, okay? Stretching that initial attack line, oh, my God. So let's think about this, all right? So we get into a conversation quite often of, well, why would you not stretch a line with you? And they're like, well, because it's about search, about life safety. Like, but why would you not? I'll give you an example. We were in just outside Baton Rouge. My good, good buddy, Paul. Paul's a captain with Baton Rouge. He's the chief in Point Coupe, in Livonia there. But what a great man. What a great, great leader. And he has us out there a lot for classes. Paulie does. So we're doing this class, and in the conversation, always happens. Conversation comes up as to, you know, what of the three things, what would you do, attack, vent, or search? And you get the hands, what we would search first. And I'm like, why would you not stretch the attack line, initial attack line? If you only do one, why would you not stretch a line? You got smoke, fire showing. And they're like, life safety. It's about getting in there and searching all this stuff and so on and so forth. And so all day long, there was a deputy sheriff and one of the municipal police officers to the coppers, you know, they were volleys on their days off from being in law enforcement. So throughout the day, they kept sneaking in from time to time in the back room, you know, take a break, sneak in, take a few minutes, and they leave and go back out on patrol. So they both were standing back there, and I actually walked right through the classroom while we're having this discussion. I said, look, let me ask you a question. All right, right now, dispatch calls you on the radio, says you got a silent alarm for a hold a robbery alarm, armed robbery, a hold up alarm at the 7-Eleven at First and Main. So hold up alarm, silent alarm at the 7-Eleven. You're en route. All of a sudden, you get 911. What's your emergency? And the phone caller says, I'm in the back of the 7-Eleven. My partner, she's up in front. There's a bad guy. He's got a mask on. He's got a gun in her head. He's yelling for the money. We're being robbed. Okay, so sir, stay on the phone. The police are on their way. Another dispatcher, 911, what's your emergency? Yeah, I'm outside the 7-Eleven filling up my car with gas, and this joint's being robbed. I can see there's a guy there with a mask. He's got a hood on. He's got a gun to her head. You have a confirmed armed robbery in progress. You're the first arriving police officer on the scene. You pull up, put it in park. You take your pistol out of your holster, leave it on the front seat, and you go inside, right? And they both start laughing. I go, but that's what they want to do. They drive this fire engine with 500 to 750 gallons of water. Some of you I know have more. You have 1,000, whatever. Let's just call it 500, 750. You know, I know some of the Quints have less, but let's just round it off. So 500, 750 of water with all this hose, you get off the rig, and because they're telling you there's someone who might be or there's someone inside, and you're going to leave your weapon on the rig. You know, so the next question is, what is the difference between the kids in their pajamas and their clothes and you and your turnout gear? Well, a little bit more protection, but when it flashes, it flashes. And you're going to wish you had an attack line in there with you. So many fires, so many fires, so many. Every single year, we save a ton of more lives by stretching the initial attack line than by doing anything else in a firearm. Nothing. Look, I love truck work just like the next guy or gal. I was a roofer like my dad, a truck guy. There is absolutely, if you don't get anything out of show tonight, there's absolutely nothing that saves more lives at a structure fire than stretch initial attack line and get what there's nothing. The first line saves more lives than anything else we do at a fire. So why would you not choose that first? You know, first thing, attack the fire, stretch a line, get it in there, and get water going, get water flowing. You know, next thing, and I'm going to take, if I could do two of those things, the second one would be to vent. The second one would be to vent the fire. Not search. I'm having a search yet. First of all, the engine crew, they're not just in there bumping in the walls and spraying water. If you're a good engine crew, you're pushing along, you're searching around your officer. You know, a lot of our victims are found or discovered by the initial attack line making their way in and about and around the building. All right. So that being said, the second thing I would do is I would vent, whether that's venting the backside or topside. I would create an exhaust opening or a vent opposite of where we're going, with our attack. Then, as I got more people seen, I would search. I'm not saying don't search. Oh my God, no. But in that order, attacking the fire, getting water delivered, getting water in on the fire as quickly as possible, couple that and coordinate that with ventilation, and then searching, and the outcome, you know, unless you have a bigger monster than you thought, you know, unless something else happens, is usually going to be in your favor. Again, we're always behind the eight ball, okay? Unless you're standing there and you watch somebody light a fire, we're always behind the eight ball. Now, one of the points I always make is, you know, there's a video, it was in Atlanta. I wish I had my buddy Dave Rhodes on. He could probably remember the fire, but it's a high-rise fire. And there's a male occupant standing with he's standing kind of at a window like he's going to jump. And there's black smoke pushing out around him, pushing heavy, you know. And, you're thinking this guy's going to jump. You can make out the tip of an aerial ladder just below him. They can't get to him. This goes on for a little bit. And one of the things you end up noticing is they end up rescuing this individual or removing him from the building. And I always ask people in class, do you know how they removed him? Through an interior stairwell. They just walked him down. When they went in to put the fire out, the fire went away, the smoke went away, and they walked him back outside, and they got him out that way. The other one was the Paxson Hotel fire in Chicago. Horrible hotel fire. The best man at my wedding, I've told a bunch of this before, was a guy named Ray Hoff. I miss Ray. Ray was an incredible firefighter, incredible officer, incredible chief officer, incredible mentor, incredible instructor in person, incredible father. Okay. Ray and his brother, Bobby Hoff. Bobby was the commissioner of Chicago for a while. Bobby's the chief out Carroll Stream, another great, 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 great firefighter and officer. Ray was the captain on Tower Ladder 10. Engine 4 and Tower Ladder 10 were first due at the Pax Hotel fire. And if I remember right, they received one 911 report of smoke in the building. Now, this was an SRO, a single room occupancy apartment building, okay, if you will, or, you know, all right, that. It was an E-shaped with the points of the E, if you would, facing, like, the backside. So you had this long front around the side. One 911 report. I'm sure there's a video out there somewhere if you YouTube it or Google it, the Paxton, Paxton, fire in Chicago, hotel fire. Oh, my God, the video footage that David Lasker and some other people filmed was absolutely incredible. They pull up, and they've already got people laying in the street. They have people virtually at every window screaming. There's heavy fire. There's heavy smoke. And Marty was the lieutenant on Engine 4. And when he pulled up with people at every window, you know, three stories, I mean, everyone in the front yelled. There's bodies in the street. People are yelling. They got broken bones. They're burned. Everybody's yelling and screaming. And what does the lieutenant engine four, the first due engine, what does he do? He stretches an attack line. He stretched the attack line inside. And if you talk to the right people there, was credited with saving some lives. He got water inside the building, inside to protect the stairwell, so they could get in and start making some searches. Now, he'll be the first one to tell you, how difficult that was to walk past a bunch of people to yell and hollering. But as an engine crew, your job is to get that line. If they're at the, every second, we tell little kids in school, every minute the fire goes, you know, without being hit or without being extinguished, without being attacked, it doubles in size, all the different things we tell them. Well, that's all going on. Well, we're outside, and we're not stretching the line inside. That fire is growing and growing and growing. The people at the windows at least have a chance. It's the people that are inside that are getting their asses kicked the longer it takes us to stretch that line. So that was huge, him getting a line in there and doing that. Now, I understand, you know, you're going to be limited with manpower and, you know, like I said, I think the average, if you really went around, and I ask a lot of questions, went around the country, you're going to see that the average engine crew running out there probably has three people. There's a lot that run with two, there's even some that run with one. But there's some that have fours, there's some fours, and there's some fives, but a lot of them run with three. Even more so, you've got to be proficient when it comes to stretching that handline. You know, that limited manpower, that three-man crew, if you will, versus fully loaded. Now, there's a lot of three-man engines, you know, with men and women, right, that do incredible. It doesn't mean you can't. I mean, they do absolutely incredible. We all know what that fourth person could do for you, but the three-man crew, you know, does some incredible things. Again, understanding and knowing, all right, knowing who is where and who's riding behind you and how often you stretch that line. Now, one of the things we've talked about before is, you know, I always use this phrase when it comes to the fire service. When it comes to speed, and I'll just say speed kills. Speed kills in the fire service. You could attach it to whatever. If you're, you know, speed kills with your driving, speed kills when you're too much of a hurry to get a backup person out before you run someone over, speed kills if you don't put your seatbelt on, speed kills, okay? That being said, if you want to be fast at getting into a burning building, at stretching a line into a burning building, then do more Donnie Doffing. For those that like to wear their face pieces, that's a big debate in the cab and all that stuff. If you want to be faster at getting, you know, at put your, then do more Donnie Doffing drills with your SCBA. All right, we got that away. While we're doing that, okay, we need to be quicker and better trained at stretching your initial tack line. All right, pulling it over and over and over again. Okay, so that being said, if you want to be faster at getting water and delivering water to the seat of a fire, onto the fire, into the fire room, from the outside, from the inside, whatever your choice is, whatever your how you run is fine, okay? That all comes down to speed comes with efficiency. Efficiency comes with training. All right. Now, when I said speed kills, I meant speed kills when it comes to, you know, driving too fast. We're not taking it. We don't stop to size up. We don't take a look. We don't do this. We want to be very quick at what we're doing, but the speed comes with efficiency, which is what you need to be quick at something. All right. You may luck out and be fair, but you want to be fast at something. You want that speed. It comes with efficiency. And the efficiency comes with training. And it's not the most exciting thing. You know, stretching dry hose and not pump throw, but you know what? The payoff is incredible. Comes to, you know, getting in there to be in that crew that gets in there and knocks the fire. Now, one of the things I want to get back to here real quick is the whole 500 versus 750 versus 1,000. I remember going to a fire once with our guys, and I'm asking the captain, stretch a line, get, you know, we got to get the line stretched. And he's like, I got to get my 5-inch to the higher units. I understand. I'll get an engine coming in to get you. Get in there and start attacking this with tank water. And anyway, so we're having a cup of coffee after the fire, and I said, why were you not as aggressive at getting the, you know, as you should have been with getting that initial tack line in? He said, well, I was worried, boss, about running out of water. And I said, but you, in this case, it's, you have 750 gallons of water. Now, forget that. Check that. 30 of it's foam, 720. All right. I said, so now the rest of the guys come in, they all sit down in the office, we got a cup of coffee, and we're talking, you know, shop like I love to do. And I asked the question, so how much water do we carry? 750, 30. All right, so let's not even call it 720. Let's take 20 gallons and throw it on the ground. I said, now, what are we throwing on the tips of our inch three-quarter cross lights? Let's just call it cross. We pull up at a house fire. house fire cross leg. What are we flowing out of our 200-foot cross leg? That being said, that came up with the whole conversation, what we actually do flow versus what we don't flow, and what, you know, let's go look at our nozzles. Anyway, so and we get that all figured out. I said, okay, so if you're flowing, let's say you flow 175 gallons of water up the nozzle. Let's just say that, 175. 175 into 700 gallons of water is what? And they start doing the math, and it's 4 minutes, three, whatever. What if it's 200? We're doing, okay. I say, you know what? Let's just say, let's just say you have, let's do this easy. You have 3 minutes of water. 3 minutes of water. Now, and this is a good drill for you to do it when you're sitting at the kitchen table. Just try this once, okay? Try it while everybody's just sitting there, having a cup of coffee, glass of tea, or whatever, all right? Have somebody get out their iPhone or Huckleberry, whatever you carry, your cell phone, and go to their stopwatch. So, okay, ready? I'm going to open the door for you. I'm going to let you push the line inside. You're inside this structure fire. Let's say it's house. And you're about to start fighting the fire, okay? So, ready? Go. And the guy with the stopwatch starts the stopwatch. I go, okay, so you're flowing water, you're flowing. Now, you're not like half, you're in there open. Like, think about this, all the way, right? You're in there with the nozzle, you're doing what you're doing. And I'll be talking, say, you know, now we got water flowing, you're hitting the fire. Okay, are we there yet? Where are we at, a minute? And he goes, no, Chief, 10 seconds. I'm like, holy good Lord, 10 seconds. Okay. So that being said, because I know a lot of you just get in there and lay in the hallway and open up the nozzle and just flow water fully open the whole time you're in there, right? From start, you never shut the nozzle off. And they all start kind of giggling. I said, no, keep going. I said, well, are we at a minute? He goes, no, we're at 30 seconds. I'm like, good Lord, man. And as we keep going, you can see I'm going with this. I do it a little more. I said, this is going to take forever. We're not even at a minute yet. And I'm telling you, all right, getting a positive source, whether you hook to a hydrant or you sustain your water supply with a tanker operation, a tender operation, it doesn't matter. All right, that is huge. Whichever you have to do, it doesn't matter. We want to do that, and we will do that. We have to do that. But how much damage are we going to do to the fire with 500 or 600 or 700 gallons of water? I mean, 3 minutes. If you can't darken down or make some headway inside a house fire in 3 minutes let me just say this, wide open, something's not clicking, something's not right, okay? Now, we've had a ton of fire in places before, some big buildings and so on and so forth, but, you know, is it possible to run out of water? Absolutely, but what I'm saying here is, you've got 3 minutes is a long ass time to be fighting a fire. You know, now as a company officer and nozzle, you have to know that you're working off tank water, and you need to know what your limitations are. All those different things go along with it. My whole point was, you can make some great headway, if not put. Let me ask you this: ask yourself, if you're listening right now, ask this question: how many times have you been to a fire? You pull up, there's fire blown out a window or two, and they knock the fire before you even hit the hydrant or before you even open up the intake, you know, with your 5-inch from your water supply. They knock the fire with tank water, all right? There's a reason for that. And, again, I'm not saying, you know, that you don't worry about hitting a hydrant or dropping tanks. Not saying at all. In fact, that's critical that we need to think about that next. What I'm saying is you carry that water for a reason, all right? You carry that water for a reason. Go to work with it. There's a lot of things. If you hit things from the outside first because you have minimum staffing, you know, that just happened in Trophy Club. They had a CPR, and they had a big-ass house going down here in Texas, and they got there, and they started hitting it from the outside. Whenever they could, you pull up with a couple guys because your third one dropped off to go to the hospital doing CPR. You do what you can. There's a tremendous amount of damage you can do to that fire with your tank water. So don't forget that you carry that water for a reason, okay? All right. Now, the other part of this is we have always taught a coordinated fire attack. For those that, you know, we've always said to, God bless to anyone that gets there before us, police officers or civilians, please don't break the windows out, you know, till we get there because it'll spread the fire. Well, you know, old family saying there, duh. Yeah, that happens. So we've always taught and instructed and trained our people in a coordinated fire attack. All right, so a lot of what we're teaching people in now isn't new. It's been there for a long time. Again, back to the basics, okay? We need to coordinate our ventilation with that initial attack line or with the fire attack so we're doing the right things and we're not reversing what's going on for the people that are inside, okay? An aggressive attack is huge. You know, I've mentioned this several times in the show. I'll mention it again for those that may not have heard it. You can go to my blog at Firefighter Nation. I talked about, are we too aggressive or, you know, are we too aggressive or are we just using, you know, the wrong word? And what I meant by that was I said, every day I thank God. I thank God that firefighters are aggressive enough, you know, to make that second floor for that grandma or that kid or come get you if you're trapped inside, if you're a firefighter trapped inside. I thank God every day. It's in their very nature. I thank God every day that firefighters are aggressive with that pin and accident, that CPR and that baby. Okay. The word we need to be concerned with is not aggressive. Or are we too aggressive? The word we need to be concerned with is reckless. You know, it's in our very nature. And it's what it takes for us to be successful, to be aggressive at what we do, whether it's that pin and accident, like I said, CPR and a baby or fighting a fire. Our natural aggressiveness, coordinated, okay, is what's going to lend to a successful fire attack the majority of the times at this. Now, that being said, if you watch the videos or read the reports, the moment we become reckless, all right, is when you can stop the videos. Go, stop. Why did he climb up on that roof? Why did they do that? Why did they do this? Or why did they do that? You can see it. You can see it coming. I really don't think, you know, the problem is, are we too aggressive? More that is when we become reckless. When we become reckless, we get firefighters hurt and killed. But we need to be aggressive with how we start. Nothing we do, how we drive the pumpers at a grocery store is aggressive. How we drive to red lights and sirens, how we park, what we do when we get off, we're stretching, everything we do. You know, the quicker we do it, the faster we do it, the better trained we are is going to lend to the success of that operation. Again, I think the word we need to be concerned with, you know, when it comes to getting firefighters hurt and killed is, you know, reckless. Not when we're too aggressive. I thank God every day that firefighters are aggressive enough to do what they do. Like I mentioned earlier, it's when we become reckless that we have a problem, okay? So that being that, and real quick, if you're tuning in, my partner, my good buddy John Salka. If you know John, he's a first assistant chief with the South Blooming Grove Volunteer Fire Department. He's a Valley, been doing it for 43 years, been a Valley. He caught a structure fire right at the beginning of the show. So he's out doing what he loves doing. That's care business out there. But so let's talk about, you know, backing up that first line, number one, okay? But we have to be concerned with making sure, all right, again, we're talking about the importance of stretching that initial attack line. As the first line goes, the fire goes. All right. So that being said, we can't do that without having a sustained water flow of some kind. That means either hit the hydrant, we're having a line brought to us, you know, stretch it, reverse, however you do it, however you drop getting water to that first arriving pumper with that initial attack line, so they don't run out of tank water or they can sustain their fire attack even further. Whether that's dropping tanks on the ground, you know, porta tanks, or whatever you do to make that happen, that is absolutely critical in this step. So first is being as quick as we can safely to stretch the initial attack line into the – either attack the fire, like I said, whether you do from the outside right away, inside, however you do it, getting water to the fire as quickly and as efficiently as possible. All right, again, knowing how to stretch that initial attack line quickly, getting water on the fire. All right. That being said, second is making sure we've got a positive source or we're dropping tanks if you're in an unhydrated area to make sure we've got that done. And then after that, it's making sure we're backing up that first line. So we got our fire attack going on. The next thing we're going to try to do somewhere in here is we're trying to vent. Hopefully we're doing a search and then we're trying to get a backup line or second line. Now, in most cases, about the time you get the second line stretch in the building, most of your problems go away because we got the line there quickly, the first one, and put the fire out. I've got an article coming out called Page 2, you know, and my point with it is we're so used to Page 1. We pull up, we stretch a line, we put the fire out, we you know, we have to find some extra work for some guys that stand around to do, so they get to do something and so on and so forth. Page two is what happens when the fire doesn't go out. What happens when you have to go out and change bottles? What happens when you have to go to a second alarm? All those page two, what happens with page two? So, again, to be prepared for page two, we've got to know that we've got to, again, stretch initial attack line. We're going to be using our tank water if, when possible, you know, unless you're lucky enough to have a hydrant right in front by the time you get it. All right. Sustaining that process by either, you know, a hydrant, 5-inch, whatever you do to get water. All right. Dropping tanks if you're in a non-hydrant area. All right. Then we're talking about somewhere to process pretty quick. We're going to try venting the structure. Hell, one guy could come around the back and start, you know, vent the back of the building and give some relief for the crew pushing through the front. Then we're going to start searching and then getting that second line pushed in there behind them, getting the backup line for them. All right. So that being said, we've been talking. We've been talking tonight, the lion's share, about the importance of the initial attack line and kind of some things surrounding it. And that's, number one, the training that goes into doing this. Folks, there's absolutely no reason to not be stretching hose. You know, we talk about this in class. A lot of people come up and say, things like, well, I don't know what to train on. I'm like, you know what to train on? You got a pumper sitting there. There's hundreds of things, hundreds, literally hundreds of things you could train with the pumper, different variations with everything you have on there. But probably one of the most important things you could do when it comes to being a firefighter is stretching the initial attack line. Stretching, like I told you about the engine crew I followed, you know, back to quarters that stopped at a local park, stretching the parking lot, stretching the back of the firehouse, stretching through the apparatus floor, stretching around the firehouse, stretching to the front door. Sometimes the same door over and over and over again. You want a simple task? Take two of your orange cones, traffic cones, your safety cones off your pumper, and use those as obstacles. And you can use the same damn door to the firehouse that you're housed out of to say that's the door I want you to stretch the crosslay to. But drop those cones at different locations that they have to feed out around. They have to lay the hose, you know, around. You see where I'm going with this. It's easy, if you want it to be, on how you set this up. Okay? Again, it's not the most exciting thing. You're not out there chopping and cutting and throwing up. But you know what? I'm telling you, the feeling, the exhilaration, the feeling you're going to get by kicking ass at a structure fire because you got the initial attack line in, as quick as you did and delivered water to the fire as quickly as you did is absolutely the feeling. I can't even describe it for you. Is going to be, it's gonna, high fives all around the fire ground when that happens. All right. So if you're one of the company officers that's listening, please, you know, let's talk about getting back to the basics. Let's start stretching hose more. All right. There's a lot of other things that you'd be doing too. Whether it's force entry and searching our hands and knees and throwing ladders and things like that. But stretching hose, I'll repeat what we said earlier. There is nothing that we do to structure fire that saves more lives anywhere than stretching initial attack line. We save more lives every year in the fire service by stretching that initial attack line, doing it quickly, efficiently, and deliver water to the fire. So please train your people. Get out there and make it happen. You know, take a look at your hose loads. All right. If they don't go back on the rig, you know, easily, then they're not going to come off it easily in most cases. Okay. You know, make sure that we're not just dropping a pile of hose on the ground. That the guys and gals know how to stretch the hose. You know, be careful what you're doing with the videos that are out there and what you're saying, what you're applying. If anything, show them to the men and women that work with you around you and say, look, this isn't going to be us. We're not going to be these folks. You know, we're going to be better than that. We're going to get the line stretched, you know, to that door, around that side, into that building quicker than anybody else, because we want to be the best. We want to be the best that we're doing, because there's a much bigger picture than what we see on television. The much bigger picture of those people out there that we all got into this business for. I think we forget that message once in a while, that it's about them, it's those folks out there, and about us getting there quickly and doing what we can to make their problem go away. So, company officers, make sure you're doing that. You're training guys. You young firefighters, you don't even have to have the company officer stand there. If he or she's busy, you can still go out and stretch hose, you know, with your partner, get out there and stretch hose, and you can train, you can practice as much as you want with this as well. All right. So again, we've been talking tonight about you know, that first line we were talking about is the first line goes, so goes the fire. The importance of stretch the initial attack line, the tree that goes behind it, everything else when it comes at you, that you need to be successful in your fire attack. Again, we save more lives, I'll say it one last time, by stretching the initial attack line than by doing anything. Nothing comes close to saving lives than stretching the initial attack line. All right, so let's work on the stretches. Make sure we're getting into the building or getting to it quickly, getting the hose off, getting it charged, and throwing water. All right. Hey, you've been listening to the Command Post. I'm Chief Rick Lasky. My good buddy and partner, John South, is at a structure fire at his Valley Place. He left right at the beginning of the show. Our next show date is Thursday, October 25th. As always, at 6:30 Central, 7:30 Eastern. We're on Facebook and Twitter. We got our websites. If you're looking for John Salka, you can get him at firecommandtraining.com, firecommandtraining.com. If you're looking for me, you can go to prideandownership.com, all right, prideandownership.com. It's got a lot of contact information on it. If you're looking for any classes, give us a shout. We'd love to come out and teach for you, spend a day, talk shop with your folks, you know, have dinner back at the firehouse or whatever. Just, you know, we love the job like you love the job. If you didn't love it, you will be listening to this show. We appreciate that. It was our honor to be here with you tonight. In closing, please keep the men and women serving the armed forces. We say this every show, in the armed forces, in your thoughts and prayers, as well as our brothers and sisters and our law enforcement family. Please take a moment on September 11th to remember those who sacrificed so much back then and those who are still fighting the fight from that day. Because remember, folks, never forgetting means never forgetting. Be safe and God bless you, and thanks for listening tonight.